Last year, Adam and I and a few hundred friends of DeSoto gathered in the Masonic Lodge inside a cemetery in the heart of Hollywood. Were we there to practice some dark rite? Some sinister ritual designed to bring deceased Star Trek actors back to the plane of the living? To bring an unholy horde of undead nerd celebrities to Earth to consume the brains of the living? No, we were just doing our live show of the Share Your Embarrassment Tour. It's our review of Star Trek V, and we filmed it. We just wanted to let you know to get ready for that live stream announcement coming next week. If you're a Max Fun member and you support our shows, you'll get access to discounted tickets from membership at MaximumFun.org. So, good time to make sure those emails are delivering properly to your inbox. Either way, we'll be announcing ticket links soon here and on our mailing list that you can sign up for at podshop.biz. The Share Your Embarrassment Tour is coming to your living room for one last stop, and you're not going to want to miss it.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet. Engage.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation, a Star Trek podcast by two guys who are a little bit embarrassed to be making a Star Trek podcast. I'm Ben Harrison.
I'm Adam Pranica.
Welcome to the show, Adam.
Thanks, Ben. Ben, it's the week of San Diego Comic-Con. Do you wish you were there?
You know, I have been to the areas surrounding Comic-Con a couple of times for work. Mm-hmm. I've never actually been in it. I tend to not go to things that other people are going to go to.
I don't like large crowds. Is that what you're expressing?
Yeah. I was sort of thinking about this in terms of being an only child recently.
Yeah.
Like, I really like going to a concert if I'm there as the camera guy or something, because I'm not like everybody else. I get to go, like, into a special room that has restricted access.
Mm-hmm.
That really appeals to me.
Yeah, when you shoot a show, it almost feels like you're defended in a way. Like when you're when you're on sticks with a camera, like you have a natural defense. You are not in with the throng.
Yeah.
That somehow makes it better.
Being a member of the throng is a very alien and upsetting feeling for me.
Well, I wish I was there. I wish we were there specifically. And especially this year, like the 50th anniversary of the show, like,
yeah,
I think it'd be fun to be there. I wish we had merch done in time.
Yeah, it seems like there's a lot of cool Star Trek stuff happening
that
isn't just that, though. So maybe we'll get invited to, you know, appear somewhere else.
Have you ever been to a Star Trek convention?
Other than the weird, very specific one that I talked about on a recent episode, no. And that wasn't even really being at it. I just saw it from a confused distance.
Well, they're very confusing, Ben. I've been to one.
Wow.
I went to a Star Trek convention that happened in Seattle while I was in high school.
Whoa.
And if you were to see me in high school, you'd think I was in junior high. Pretty late bloomer.
I have a very distinct memory of getting to high school, and on my bus trip to, like, freshman orientation, seeing the dudes that were talking about Star Trek and Babylon 5 and stuff, and being like, now, this is a moment of, this is a decision-making moment. Do I throw myself in with this lot and, you know, school all of these nerds on knowledge that they purport to have but don't really?
Yeah.
Or do I take myself into the closet and try to pretend I'm something I'm not?
What did you decide?
I chose the latter, and it's you know, I've been kind of a lonely dude ever since.
Was that the road less traveled and it has made all the difference?
It was certainly the road to not really having that many friends until, like, basically senior year.
Let me tell you, Ben, I went to this convention with a girl.
Whoa. Was it a date?
Well, no.
Was it a date to you?
I really liked this girl and I was attracted to her very much. But I think it was one of those situations where I felt like I was incredibly out of my league at that moment. And yeah. I was just surprised and amused that a girl wanted to do this with me at all. And so, like, when you're playing with house money in a social way, like,
right.
I was just there to enjoy the company and the time. But mm-hmm. this also marked the moment where I actually met Marina Surtees at a signing.
Whoa.
I got an action figure signed from her.
Dang.
She seemed very disinterested in having a conversation of any kind. And I completely, like, get that. Oh, my God. Like, the yeah. line for signings at a Star Trek convention is 1,000 people long.
Yeah, but you'd think that she would have seen you from across the room walking toward her.
And the really cute girl I was with and going like, God, I need to give this guy some help.
Yeah.
This guy's in real trouble.
Yeah, she could have wingmanned the shit out of that situation.
She really could. She could have...
If that cute girl had seen Marina Surtees take a shine to you...
It could have changed my life.
Could have, yeah.
Yeah.
You could have bloomed much earlier.
I'm still blooming, Ben. Anyway, I've wanted to go back to a convention. I think I'm emotionally ready to go back to a convention after yeah. that being my one and only time.
Well, now that
but I've been thinking a lot about it since the San Diego thing came up.
Yeah, and now that you have an unaccountably popular Star Trek podcast,
right? Maybe I'll be doing the signings. Maybe I'll be yeah. trying to hook up out of their league dudes with really cool girls who happen to go to Star Trek conventions with them.
You take a life moment like that. You can't really hold it against Marina.
No, not at all.
Our pal, Marina.
I don't.
But you
friend of
learn
the show,
something from
Marina Surtees. Yeah.
Something that you personally would do differently is make sure everybody gets their dick wet after the convention.
Show enough. So, Ben, we're talking about uncomfortable date, quasi-date, or not date at all scenarios for yeah. a very specific reason, because the episode today is Season 3, Episode 5, Booby Trap, and yeah. it's a theme that plays throughout, doesn't it?
Yeah, it opens with a bad quasi-date. Unclear if I think that the girl in this scene agreed to this date before realizing that it was a date. She thought it was a chill beach hang with no strings attached.
Yeah, Geordi did not get express written consent that it was a date. I think I've done this. I remember doing yeah. this all the time in high school yeah. and college. You think it's one thing and it's not. She thinks it's one thing and it's not.
One of the greatest thought technologies I ever encountered toward the end of college was... When you want to go on a date with a girl, say, hey, do you want to go on a date with me?
Pretty great.
Because
pretty
because,
great thought technology there.
Yeah. It doesn't, like, there is no ambiguity as to what you are inviting her to.
Yeah. 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 If you're young enough to be going out on dates right now, viewer,
yeah.
I'm addressing the viewers right now.
Yeah.
Go ahead and call it what it is.
Yeah. And it's also, like, I think... A girl will appreciate the funny directness of that question as being not like what they normally get. It's normally a lot of like, you like movies. Do you want to catch some movie? You know?
Yeah. So there's a number of problems right off the bat with this scenario that Geordi finds himself in. I mean, let's list them out. There's the first bullet, which is, Christy doesn't know it's a date.
Right.
They're on the holodeck in a sort of moonlight on the beach scenario. Like they've got coconut drinks with umbrellas. Yeah.
They've got cocoa no-nos.
They've got a blanket.
We gotta see if there's a recipe for cocoa no-nos. Let me like Google that while you talk.
There might be a hit podcast that could do a show, an entire show on the cocoa no-no.
There's a
cocoa no-no sounds like the thing you say when you don't want butt stuff.
There's a website called foodreplicator.tumblr.com.
Of course there is.
It's all Star Trek food.
That's great. Throw that up on let's throw that up on our Facebook group.
All right.
Or page or whatever it is.
Will do.
So Geordi has set this scene in the most cheesily romantic way possible. Like, he's trying too hard is what he's doing. He's got the violin player.
But the violin player is so, like, tonally wrong, you know? Like, if you're on a tropical beach, like, maybe a guy with a steel drum or something, but not a fucking gypsy with a fiddle.
Yeah, if I'm on a beach in the moonlight, I'd want to find out about Christie's feelings about Ja right away.
Yeah, exactly. That's a good point. But what are the chances in the 24th century they're still calling them gypsies? Which they actually refer to that character as this episode.
Oh, man. This scene was distracting in a couple of ways. One, because you're seeing a slow-speed car crash of Geordi's hopes and dreams with Fair Christie. And the other is, I'm also in love with Christie. She's the love interest from Tommy Boy.
Is she really?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, so that goes way back.
That explains why you have such strong feelings about her.
Yeah.
Do you think that this gypsy put a gypsy curse on Geordi for telling him to buzz off at the end of this scene? And that's why Geordi is so bad with women for the rest of his life?
Oh, it's a real thinner scenario?
Yeah, yeah. He goes, creepy, creepy, creepy.
Men's rights activism is your future.
Somebody tweeted at us, we've got the wrong impression of men's rights advocates.
I laughed and laughed at that.
I think we have the right impression of men's rights advocates.
On the one hand, I really wanted to hear him out for the lulz. But on the other hand, I do not have that much time.
Yeah, or intestinal fortitude.
No.
Let's be honest.
God. So Geordi crashes and burns in a pretty epic manner. And then we cut to 10 forward, where Wesley is playing a three-dimensional chess with Data and sees like the smoking ruin that was Geordi walk in.
This is such a cool shot, too, because they're playing on a table right in, like, dead center front window.
It's the Stratagema Memorial Table, isn't it?
Totally. And there are, like, hundreds of asteroids circling outside the ship. It's a very striking image, I thought. Like, a really nicely done effect. And they see Geordi walk in, and Wesley has to, like, explain to Data why it is bad that Geordi's date ended early. Which is cute.
Uh-oh.
Did you notice that in this scene, the way that Geordi broods is by staring directly at the girl next to him for long periods of time? Like, the wide shot that's supposed to be from the point of view of Data and Wes is Geordi, like, sitting perpendicularly to the bar, facing the girl next to him, and just staring at her.
Uh-oh.
Commander Data to the bridge immediately.
Acknowledged.
Data gets paged by Riker and has to run up to the bridge. And it's because they're picking up a distress signal. And you know how episodes be starting, Adam. There's always a distress signal. And
ships be in trouble.
Yeah. ships be getting in distress. What they find as they track this signal down is a battle cruiser from a race called the Promelians that is adrift in this asteroid field. And it's like, this is like one of the coolest ship models we get, I think. Like, it looks straight out of Alien.
Yeah, and this is remastered candy right here.
Yeah, it is like a rotten-looking ship floating in space, and it just, like, it sells the shit out of that, out of what it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
So good. And And so the deal with this thing is that the whole asteroid field is like the remains of a planet that was destroyed in a like apocalyptic final battle between the Menthars and the Promelians. And it like destroyed their two civilizations, and it happened 1,000 years ago. And this battlecruiser is like astonishingly in perfect condition. Like its star drive is still there. Everything is where it should be. And Picard is just like geeked the fuck out. Like he's like, this is a museum piece. I couldn't be more excited to have discovered this. I'm going to get my name in the paper. Like, this is great.
Yeah. He's giddy, as giddy as he's ever been.
Yeah. And, so he talks Riker into letting him beam over and like poke around on the ancient ship.
And Riker's arguments for him not going over there are totally valid. He's like, the ship is 1,000 years old, by the way. We have no idea if its tinfoil hull is going to breach at any moment. Like, you are being an idiot about this. And and Picard's like, cool it, man. I build ships in a bottle. Like, I need to do this.
I like the little ship in a bottle joke that they wrote into the script here.
Yeah.
That Picard and Chief O'Brien are the only two people on the whole ship that know about ships and bottles.
Yeah, and Chief O'Brien cops to the idea of building ships and bottles, but anyone else in that scene thinks he just kissed up to the captain in that moment.
Yeah. Worf does the opposite. He goes, I didn't play with toys, which is a crazy thing to square with the fact that a couple episodes ago there was a scene where he was trying to put a model together and got, like, barged in on and broke the model.
Knock on my door! Knock next time!
Yes, sir.
Did you see anything?
No, sir. I didn't see you playing with your dolls again.
Good!
he got to playing with toys later in life?
He does it as stress relief.
It's something that Troy prescribed to him.
His way of building a model is like finding the tiniest model requiring like the tiniest hands and instruments to put together. And then anytime anyone walks into his room, he takes the model and smashes it against his own face. Like it just explodes in front of him.
Oh, man. That guy is not good at modeling, but he is good at reviewing restaurants, Adam.
Oh, my God. This is one of the greatest things that's ever happened.
Yeah. This is This is definitely top five best things that's happened as a result of this show.
This episode is brought to you today by Worf Yelp Reviews.
Yeah. Some cockeyed genius took a joke that we made on a episode a couple episodes ago and registered a Twitter account of Worf reviewing restaurants. It's mostly like the Midwest and Western state restaurants. Like there's a lot of like Durango, Colorado and Omaha, Nebraska represented in the Worf Yelp reviews.
Places you could really see him.
Yeah.
And, in your head canon.
Yeah. He's very critical of the parking at most places, but
for good reason.
Of the eggs.
It's enraging to not have good parking.
Oh, it's a lot of fun.
It's so great.
If you're on Twitter, I highly recommend you follow that account.
I mean, we talked it out, and we had that idea, and we just gave it away. Someone took it and ran with it. It's awesome.
Yeah, so good. So anyways, they beam over to this ship. It is a real dusty mess, and Picard is totally enthralled, and they beam onto like the bridge, and he talks about how cool the bridge is and like how well set up it is considering how old it is, and they turn around the command seat, and there's a crispy Klingon in there. There's like,
it's sort of Goonies vibes in there, isn't it?
Yeah, they like they definitely got a like one of the corpse models that they bought for like the Royale or something like that, and just like put some head ridge on there. they had some rotten meatloaf left over from Worf's makeup in season one, and they just troweled it onto the to the head.
Yeah, some believable loaf.
And they find a they find like a Johnny Mnemonic memory chip.
Yeah, and Picard's super geeked out. He's like, Data, do you think we could actually play this thing?
He channels some Kirk.
Yeah. Data's like, yeah, it's 1,000 years old, but like, let's use the tricorder and run some power through it. We'll see what happens. And yeah. On the screen, they're faced with a really sad captain talking about the responsibility he's taking for the death of his crew.
Yeah, he's just a jowly old green Klingon. And
the loaf is looking fresh because he's alive.
Mm-hmm. And he's saying, like, this tragedy is not their fault. They've performed admirably, and I have to take all of the responsibility for this as their captain.
And Worf even mentions, like, this is fucking great. Everyone died at their station, just how I want to go out.
Yeah.
The way that Worf, like, wants to die in a Denny's, reviewing some Burbank Sonic restaurant.
Yeah. Worf is walking around this place going, jackable, jackable.
Yeah, he's loving it. So as they're going around, they're like, they're finding little artifacts. They're flicking on the power. They're doing all sorts of stuff to this ship, this 1,000-year-old ship. It's exciting to be there.
Yeah, but seeing this captain on the screen, like, it feels like a period on the end of the sentence, you know?
Yeah.
Picard was really excited to be there, but he feels like they've kind of spooked the ghost, and they had the experience that they came for. So he's like, let's get back to the Enterprise and fuck off. And they beam back, and Picard is just, like, glowing, walking around the ship. He walks back to the bridge, and Troy is like, you know, she can't help but absorb that and bounce it back at him. And he's like, why are you looking at me funny, Troy? And she's like, I just don't get to see you this happy that often.
Yeah, Picard's nipples are, like, just shooting through his uniform.
Mm-hmm.
This is becoming a speech.
You're the captain, sir. You're entitled.
Type to ramble on about something everyone knows.
Wesley sticks the key in the ignition, fires up the engine, tries to start backing it out of the space, and the ship don't go nowhere.
Yeah, and this is on the heels of like a couple of light flickers that have happened in the recent past. Like, you get the sense that everyone just sort of accepts the idea of weird electrical glitches on this ship.
Right.
Like, when Picard beams over, as soon as he's over there, the lights go out on the in the transporter room, and O'Brien's like, huh, well, I guess I'll have to remodulate the derps with the the coolant suppressors or whatever. And the other guy in there's like, sure, yeah, should probably do that. Like, the most sophisticated thing ever built is supposed to just have pretty regular light flickering.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
It should have raised bigger alarm bells when it happened.
Right.
So what's happening here is the ship is stuck. Like they can slam the pedal to the metal and the ship stays in the same place. And this has like happened a few times now.
They get stuck in the mud.
Right. And yeah.
The space mud.
Those wheels keep spinning and the mud keeps flying up.
That's why you gotta keep a couple of bags of kitty litter in Shuttle Bay 2. You know?
Yeah,
couple bags of kitty litter and a 2x4. That'll really help in situations right. like this.
And also don't have the four-wheel drive engaged all the time.
Right.
Like, you need that to get out of a scrape. You don't fucking drive around with it, like, on all the time.
Look, this is simple stuff. Riker grew up in Alaska. He should know better.
Yeah. This is kind of embarrassing for Riker.
Yeah, do you think Wes floods the engine here? I think that's part of it.
Yeah. Yeah, Wes is just in the back of the boat ripping away at the at the cord. I don't know what's going on.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and LaForge is in engineering like, I don't know what the fuck is happening. Like, we should be cruising out of here, and we got nothing. And not only that, but if we keep trying to peel out, we're actually going to do some damage. So let's chill for a second.
The funny thing about that is that the last time we saw LaForge, he was about 3 drinks deep in 10 forward, trying to get Guinan to tell him how to talk to girls.
Oh,
and
God.
Now he's like running around the fucking engineering section like a chicken with his head cut off. And hard to avoid the conclusion that LaForge was drunk when they first tried to leave.
Oh, man. I have luckily not been put in this position, but as a freelancer, I could see it. Like, you go to a baseball day game and you're like four beers in, I could see getting a phone call for a job. And this is
you
bad
need to
timing.
Edit something overnight.
Yeah.
And it's a nice payday if you can get it done.
God, what a terrible position for Geordi to be in. Meanwhile, Christie's out there putting his name in the streets. Like, you would not believe the hacky shit Geordi tried to put on me in the holodeck.
Yeah.
What a dope.
What a dope. So they're stuck. They're stuck and they're like losing power really quickly. And the crazy thing is that whatever is stopping them moving is also slowly increasing the amount of radiation the ship is being exposed to. And so that's a mystery. And how to get out of it is also a mystery. And so they've got like a timer set, you know, like if they can't stabilize the ship's power and soon, they're going to get irradiated. And if they can't get out of there, they're going to be irradiated also. So Geordi is like put to work on this. Riker and Data beam back over to the cruiser to see if there's any like notebooks lying around that say, here's what's going on and how to get out of it. And what they find is like a, like one of those CD binders that you used to have in high school.
Some case logic.
Yeah, with all of the CDs that you own in it, and then you you take it on a family vacation to Hawaii, and you leave it in the rental car, and it's like your entire fucking music collection, and it's gone.
You try to process why your parents don't like Metallica's Black Album the same way you do. When the problem the whole time was you attempting to play the Black Album in a car with your parents?
Yeah.
Doesn't make any sense.
I mean, you're going to the beach in Hawaii. Like, why do you need that music with you?
Yeah. And when you're
there's a guy with a steel drum right down the beach. He's going to do great.
When you're in Hawaii, it's all reggae all the time.
Yeah.
It's big ship sailing on the ocean.
Don't bring all your gypsy violin CDs. I don't know what kind of music Metallica is. I assume gypsy violin.
You're not super far off.
He just kept talking in one long, incredibly unbroken sentence, moving from topic to topic so that no one had the chance to interrupt. It was really quite hypnotic.
So Geordi's got the Enterprise up on the lift and he's poking around. And he's like, look. This is clearly a warp drive problem. This is going to cost like $1,200 and it's probably going to take a few days. You're going to have to leave it here and get a rental while I go into the holodeck and try to figure out how to fix this problem.
Yeah, and so what he does, he gins this idea up in the Jim Shimoda Memorial Corner, which is very fitting.
It's where all good ideas come from.
Yeah. So he gets like the audio tape of he goes on like audible.com and gets the
not
audio
a sponsor.
Book for the technical manual for the Enterprise's warp engine, which you wouldn't think that they would make an audio book of that, but they did.
He pulls the technical manual out that you and I had in high school, like the exact technical manual.
Yeah. Available on Amazon and where all fine books are sold.
Yeah.
And the woman reading this has a sexy voice, like undeniably a mega sexy voice. And
the sort of voice you want to give your credit card number to.
Yeah. And so he transfers this over to Holodeck 3, where a simulation has been erected of the shipyard at Utopia Planitia where the Enterprise was built. And this is like this is the warp reactor lab where Galaxy class warp design was brought into the world, and the computer through a very dubious series of logical leaps decides that what Geordi has asked for is a simulation of the architect of the Enterprise's warp engine, and she happens to be the mega babe whose voice we heard on audible.com.
Did do that, didn't I?
Now, Geordi wasn't specific about this, but the version of Leah Brahms, the engineer, that the computer provides has hair that looks like a calzone.
And wait till you try her pasta fondue.
Oh, man. Her hair is very bready.
Yeah.
I just want to pull it apart and dip it in marinara.
You know, it's easy to blame Jordy for this. Like, it's a creepy thing if it was what he went into the holodeck looking for.
Yeah, yeah.
But the computer totally did this.
Yeah.
It's
like the computer's making fun of him now.
Like, Riker didn't get in this kind of trouble from Minuet.
Yeah, that's true.
But, yeah, the computer, like, does what the computer occasionally does, which is make a perfectly intelligent simulation of a human that totally passes any Turing test you could throw at it. And this is Leah Brahms, the brilliant scientist who wrote the book on warp field theory. And they, like, go to town on this problem. And it's like a love affair. Like, they have... It's torrid. They work passionately together. When they fight, it's like a sexy fight that you feel like could break out in makeouts at any moment.
Yeah. The sort of fight that ends with, like, one of them sweeping their arm across a desk and flinging all the shit everywhere.
Yeah, yeah, and laying down on it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like they have full-blown chemistry.
Ben, this episode reaches a total inflection point here that is 51% great and 49% totally soundtracked by, like, a Bette Midler music score. I thought the score for this episode totally kneecapped everything cool about what happens on the holodeck with Leah Brahms and Geordi.
Dr. Brahms?
Geordi, it's me, Leah. Don't start calling me Dr. Brahms or I'll call you Commander LaForge.
It was distractingly treacly and Midlery. It was slathered in Midler.
I totally agree with you about these scenes.
Yeah.
And I think that is in such stark contrast to the music in the entire rest of the episode.
I know.
Which is like as good as Star Trek music gets.
That's what made it all the more infuriating, is you have them side by side like this.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
My love is a fever, long and chill for that, which longer nurses the disease.
I have a standing debate with a friend of mine, Dan Cooper, technology writer at Engadget.com, about whether Utopia Planitia is supposed to be in orbit of Mars or on the surface of Mars. And this episode doesn't really clear that up, but Utopia Planitia is the name of a geographical feature on the surface of Mars in real life. Do you have a take on that? Like, whether this shipyard is meant to be a Mars surface place or an orbit place?
I'm almost positive, like, the depiction in this episode is in space. I never considered that it would be anywhere else but space.
Well, so they're in a lab and they're looking out at the ship, which is inside a huge hangar, but we don't know what's outside that hangar.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I don't know. Is it weird that I just think it's appropriate for ships to be built in space? I'd never really buy the idea of these giant ships being built on the surface of a planet and then either being hauled up on some sort of weird space elevator or them, like, under their own power leaving the atmosphere. Like,
right.
I don't know. I have no way to base that on anything that we've seen in the show so far. And it's just a personal feeling, but, like...
But you're a guy that's been in, like, the places where they build jumbo jets.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, like, I've read a little bit about that. I know that, like, one of the weird things that they do when they're creating a plane design is they have to, like, see if they can set it down on its wings and the wings will hold the body up.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, that seems crazy. That seems like it's going to break the plane, but that's actually like what's happening when the plane is in flight, is the wings are holding the whole thing up. And I feel like we know, like, the Voyager starship in a couple series from now is capable of landing on a planet's surface. So you would want to build a ship that is at least gravity resistant, you know?
Yeah. I mean, until we get a real answer while watching the show, this is all speculation, but God, I can't believe that the saucer can be held up engineering-wise
onto
the star
drive
section if it isn't in space. Like, because we're looking out the window, we're seeing an assembled starship. Like, a starship in final assembly is in, like, factory parlance. Like, I don't know how that can happen in a place with any sort of gravity, because it would just pull itself apart.
Especially if they can separate. Like, the tolerances on those couplings has got to be insanely strong.
Right. You got at least a quarter round holding the saucer to the star drive.
I gotta want to go a 10-penny sinker into the star drive, holding it onto the saucer section.
Yeah.
You can find these at your local hardware store or order them online.
That was a fun diversion.
Yeah. Anyways, yeah, we'll cut all that out.
Yeah.
As they get closer, like they achieve an early success, which is they figure out how to stabilize power on the ship. And it's not like a permanent solution, but they're going to like rewire something about the warp drive, and it's going to give them some breathing room on figuring out how to get out of there. And that's a good deal, because you know, like, their deaths are not quite so imminent. And Picard takes this breathing room as a fun time to try shooting at asteroids. Right. And so what they've learned, like, Data has sorted through the CDs and thrown out all the ones that had really bad scratches on them.
All the Third Eye Blind CDs.
Yeah, that were real skippy.
All the live CDs.
Yeah.
Everyone had that throwing copper disc, right?
Yeah.
Inescapable.
And he finds a bit of the captain's log from this battle cruiser, where he says what the thing is that's keeping them stuck. And it's like a kind of generator that is hidden in like thousands and thousands of these asteroids. And the generator is sucking energy out of the Enterprise and then shooting radiation back at it. And so it's like the whole asteroid field is essentially a trap.
It's both sucking and blowing. Is that what you're saying, Ben?
I'm saying they've gone from suck to blow.
That's it exactly.
Yeah. So what do they need to do? They need to figure out a way to expel enough energy to move the ship, but not like throw these things into overdrive.
They've got to move the ship without expending any energy that can be sucked out and then used against them in a way that, like, increases the radiation that's bombarding them. Like there's a couple of plates spinning right now.
Yeah.
There's the increasing radiation that reduces the amount of time they have to leave. Their proposed solutions to the problem, all of which use energy that can then be used against them. It's a real tangled knot.
Yeah. And so, like, they're getting pretty close, and Picard starts having Worf take pot shots at asteroids.
Fire.
Nothing.
Radiation levels increasing. 8%? 10%.
This really fucks their shit up, because the generators, like, kick into overdrive, start really, like, bathing them in radiation, and the ship goes into, like, automatic shutdown mode, where it's, like, shields and basic life support only. Everything else gets turned off, and that includes the holodeck program. And Geordi's like, wait! And it gets turned off, and he, like, talks the captain into making a special accommodation for getting the holodeck turned back on. And it's like one of those things where, like, you ask your boss to, like, go to bat for you, and, like, you better be right when your boss has to, like, stick his neck out on your behalf.
Sure, but they have, like, the solutioneering McLaughlin group in the conference room.
Issue one.
And Picard, very rightly, is like, where are you on this problem? And Geordi gives him incomplete information.
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, I'm in the holodeck by myself working this out.
I've got a model that is helping me see this problem from the inside out. I need your permission to get that shit reinstated.
Yeah. I think at that moment, Geordi knows what he's doing is creepy. He can't not know that. Because by not telling him the whole story, that's the only way that that works.
Yeah. So he gets it reinstated. He's down there working, and Picard comes to check in on, like, literally the only person at this point on the ship who's working on solving the problem is Geordi. They have 1,000 people on this ship, and Geordi is by himself in a holodeck trying to solve the problem.
I thought this was insane. Meanwhile, like, Data is on the bridge, like, basically playing mix CDs of Captain's Logs, while Geordi's in the holodeck getting blue balls with a fake engineer trying to solve the problem. Like, it's incredibly the opposite of what should be happening.
Yeah. Picard comes down there and is, like, basically speechless when he sees what Geordi is doing. And he, like, confirms with Geordi that he is close to having a solution, which, to, you know, in Geordi's defense, he genuinely is. But Captain Picard leaves, and we cut to Picard sitting alone in his ready room, looking out the window, 1,000-yard stare, just like, boy, I thought I was the creepiest person on this ship, and I am not.
He has seen some serious shit in that moment.
He is so disturbed. He is shaken to his core.
That's his own version of Riker's leaning wall, just the flip around of the chair, staring, like, 1,000-yard stare out the window. Like, oh my God. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like all the lights are out now because, like, the ship is on, like, super low reserves of power, and Riker walks in, and, like, it's like a scene to just kind of, like, amplify the stakes one last time.
Yeah.
What Geordi has come up with is, we're going to turn control of navigation over to the computer, and the computer is going to be able to make adjustments to its course so fast that the satellites that are sucking its energy won't be able to react in time to counteract its movements.
They're betting on the idea that their modern computer is faster than a 1,000-year-old computer. It's like, it's a pretty fair bet, I think.
And they run some simulations of this, and this is actually, like, kind of a cool, like, this is like something you can actually learn something about statistics from, where they run a bunch of simulations and sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't.
Like, yeah.
In 30 or 40% of the simulations of this very complex system, the Enterprise gets out and it's cool, and the rest of the time it gets zapped to hell by the radiation.
Yeah, they run the sim the first time and Stuffed Crust Leo Brahms is like, oh, this is great, we solved it. And Geordi's like, no, let's run it again. And so what we're seeing is, like, basically a coin flip of a chance.
Right.
Because the second time they lose.
Darmok and Jalad.
This episode is brought to you by the spring cleaning champions, Manscaped. This season, make sure to groom your carpets and your drapes, the leaders in below-the-waist grooming. Clear out your winter bush with Manscaped's Lawnmower 5.0 and watch your confidence bloom like the springtime flowers. Hey, maybe you're getting away on weekends, getting into a swimsuit, into a sexy situation, where you're not wearing pants at all. You want to look your best from head to toe. Get yourself some Manscaped products. You know, it doesn't just have to be your junk. You know, they've got the Beard Hedger Pro Kit and a Handyman Electric Face Shaver. They make great stuff, and I think you'll really enjoy it. And you'll get 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. Nothing like a little spring cleaning in your pants. Put your best foot forward and present your new business project or political thing
as well as you possibly can on the internet. How do you do that? Not through some cookie cutter form on a social media website or trying and failing to code a pretty website yourself. No, you go to Squarespace, start using their completely new guided design system, Squarespace Blueprint, which helps you choose from professionally curated layouts and styling options that help you build a unique online presence from the ground up that is tailored to your brand or business. Squarespace has been a super loyal sponsor of The Greatest Generation. We hope you will give them a try. Go to squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/scarves to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain.
It's Webby season. Hi, I'm Sequoia Holmes, host of the Black People Love Paramore podcast, and we are nominated for a Webby for the episode where I interviewed Hayley Williams. In case you're unfamiliar, Black People Love Paramore is a podcast delving into the common and uncommon interests of Black people in order to help us feel more seen. We would love your vote to help us win this Webby. Please take a second and go over to the Black People Love Paramore podcast social media accounts, and you can find them at BPLP Pod across all social media platforms. Hit the link in bio and vote for Black People Love Paramore.
Hi, I'm Travis McElroy.
And I'm Teresa McElroy.
And we're the host of Schmanners.
We don't believe that etiquette should be used to judge other people.
No, on Schmanners, we see etiquette as a way to navigate social situations with confidence.
So if that sounds like something you're into,
join us every Friday on Maximum Fun, wherever you get your podcasts.
They're like a little too creeped out to let Steph Crest run the show. But what they work out is just as scary, which is they shut everything off. They gun it, like they get some momentum going, and then basically use only a couple of thrusters to steer the ship past all of the asteroids and out of the debris field.
Who is at the helm for this, Ben?
That would be none other than my main man, Captain Jean-Luc Picard.
Yeah, so Geordi hatches the plan. Picard's like, good enough for me. Taps Wes on the shoulder, gets him out of the con, takes a seat, and decides to fly the ship himself, which I think is pretty badass.
Pretty fucking sick, yeah. And this is like some of the closest close-ups we ever get of what the buttons on the steering panel look like. And there's like a D-pad, like a plus-shaped part where it's like that part goes forward, that part goes backward. But it's a lot of button tapping and recalculating.
It's unclear if it's based mostly on a Xbox 360 controller or a PlayStation controller.
Yeah.
At this point,
like it might be PlayStation 3. It could be partly like Dreamcast.
Right.
Like there's some throwback parts to it.
Yeah. But you don't need to understand it to really dig the gravity of the captain taking the wheel. Hands on the wheel, foot on the gas, arm out the window.
Yeah, and gravity is the operative word because he uses the gravity of a large asteroid to like pull them in and then slingshot them out of the field. And it's like, it's fun. It's really played well for suspense, and Data's kind of talking them through it and saying like when it's fucked up and when the day is saved, and then they are out.
It is true hero status for JLP.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
This is the third season, not even halfway through the third season. Has there been another time where the captain of the ship saved everyone on the ship? I'm sure it's happened a couple of times, but never as pronounced as this moment. Like, he takes the ship on his back and he just does the thing. Pretty great. Yeah.
This is a fucking sick scene and makes you really love Picard.
Like, in the pilot episode, everyone looks at Riker like he's a goddamn hero by connecting the ship together while they're underway.
Yeah.
By verbally giving commands. Picard saves the ship from a bunch of asteroids that have landmines on them. Everyone right. just goes about their business. Like, yeah, this is Picard being Picard.
Yeah.
Like,
he's able to personally take responsibility for that, which is...
He deserves so much more credit than he gets, is what I'm saying.
They're in the clear. Picard has demonstrated himself to be the swingingest dick on the Enterprise.
Yeah.
Taking the belt back away from Riker.
Yeah.
And Geordi goes down to the holodeck to have his, like, Dixon Hill with the, with the police detective moment. And this turns into a makeout scene between him and Leah Brahms.
When you kiss Geordi, I feel like you're kissing a man with braces on his entire face. You know? There's just no escaping the braces.
Yeah.
You don't want to get that haircut.
What do you think Geordi does when he has... Not that that dude fucks, but when that dude fucks, does he...
Does he take off the retainer?
I take my glasses off when I am doing...
when you're performing
an intimate thing, because they get in the way.
I'm so glad, you know? I know that.
But that dude is blind when he takes his glasses off.
Yeah. Wow. I don't know.
It's like he can never do it with the lights on.
Well, what we know about him as a character would seem to indicate to me that he keeps it on. He keeps his visor on and he keeps his socks on. That's what I'm imagining. Like, he doesn't go all the way naked. That's what I think. I'm hoping we get an episode where we find out.
Yeah, I'm sure there's an episode where they show it going in.
God, this was the moment where everything went downhill for Geordi as a character.
Like, yeah, it's an inflection point for sure.
I think we both read that character bio that went around. I feel like this went around a couple weeks ago, where there was a series note, sort of a character capsule about what they were going to do with Geordi in season 3. And the way they wrote it made it seem like this is the season of Geordi. Like, he's going to get out there. He's going to be like, he's going to Riker it up a little bit. He's gonna have some romantic interests, and he's gonna be a man about town. And the way that he is depicted instead is like an embarrassment. It sucks because I don't know, like, who else on this show is the embodiment of the engineer tech type? It's Geordi, you know?
Yeah.
And Geordi is cool in every other way.
Yeah.
He's creepy as hell with girls. Guinan fucking wants to, like, report him as a sexual predator after their weird conversation in 10 Forward.
Yeah, she's looking for the phone with the blue light on top of it.
Yeah.
Like, the second he starts talking to her.
Yeah, Guinan's reaching for the dustbuster behind the bar. It's really troubling. Yeah,
you know she has that fucking super nubby, crazy-ass alien rifle back there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ready to go.
Yeah, I mean... There's a difference between innocently fucking up and being, like, dangerously a fuck up.
Yeah.
And he's not dangerous, but he sure isn't innocent, I don't think.
He's a weirdo.
Yeah, maybe we should reach out to that men's rights activist guy for some answers. I think that would really help us understand the situation.
Yeah. As a Geordi type, what do you think about this situation?
So as a total Geordi, I imagine you know exactly what he's going through.
This isn't so much his fault as the woman's fault.
Hey, Ben, did you like this episode?
I did like this episode. You know, it's directed by a woman, and that really surprised me when I was watching the episode this time. I had never considered, like, who was steering the ship. It makes me think a little bit differently about the relationship that's depicted between Geordi and Leah Brahms. And, you know, like, I think that it's possible to watch this and not be totally unsympathetic to Geordi, but it is also not possible to watch it and feel like he's kind of damaged in a pretty substantial way. And if we're, like, taking the character seriously as written, I think that that's like kind of a tragic flaw that he has.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so like, I think that watching it this time, I kind of felt for him in a way where, like, before maybe I would have just been making fun of him.
Yeah. The way we have been the entire episode here.
Yeah.
Yeah, I get that. That's interesting that it was directed by a woman. I wonder, it's unclear to me, like, how much creative latitude the director has on a show like this, but
yeah, and I don't think much,
but visually it was lit spectacularly. Like it when the power goes out on the ship, it got really moody.
Yeah,
the lighting effects on the Promelian ship were spot mm-hmm. on. Like, I love it when they mess with light on this show. Like, for yeah. the most part, it's just like it's really lit, hot and flat, and whenever they right. can get shadows on the show, I just really dig it. It looks less like TV and more like film when they do it.
The season 3 lighting is great so far.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, there've been a couple of dippy episodes that haven't been that well lit, but like so far, like a mile ahead of the other two seasons that we've watched.
Most def.
I am the cutest of all. You will assist us. I am the cutest of all.
Hey, Ben.
What's that, Adam?
Did you see a drunk Shimoda in this episode?
Incredible. Drunk Shimoda!
I did. My drunk Shimoda in this episode is Riker for a thing he did when they first tried to pull out of the parking space and they couldn't. I think, like, Worf goes like, oh, fuck, there's a bunch of radiation all of a sudden. And Riker just tries to slip into the captain. Oh, by the way, while you were gone, there was lots of problems with the power. Like, he definitely, like, didn't bring that up when Captain Picard came back, waited the entire time for Captain Picard to, like, walk around the ship in the tip top of spirits. And then the second problems start happening, he's like, by the way.
It's like Riker's the babysitter and the parents come home and, like, the parents give him the $20 bill. He's walking off of the front door and he's like, oh, by the way, the bathroom is just full of vomit. Bye.
Yeah.
Yeah. My Shimoda, I think, speaks towards something we teased a little bit earlier, which was, like, why did Picard only put one dude on this problem? Like, there's a point where Geordi is in the holodeck solutioneering the situation.
Yeah.
And it's getting down to crunch time. Like, the computer's calling out.
Right, they're like 20 minutes from death.
Yeah. And Geordi radios up to Picard in the bridge and he's like, look, I just need more time. And Picard is like, okay, I can give you a few more minutes or whatever. But what other plan does Picard have? What's his plan right. B? He's put all his eggs in the Geordi basket. There's no other engineers working the problem that we know about.
Yeah, like there is a team of engineers on this ship.
Yeah, there's a whole
like Geordi is a department head. He probably has dozens of people working under him, and he doesn't involve any of them in his problem solving project.
That is suicidal to me. And so for Picard to be like, yeah, you can have a few more minutes. I was screaming at the TV like, yeah, because who else is doing anything right now? Like, like you're not doing anything else with that time.
Yeah, you cut to the engineering section. There's a lot of folding chairs laid out. Everybody's sipping on a cocoa no-no.
Yeah, everyone's sitting on a folding chair like they're sitting on a toilet, like elbows on knees, just sort of like waiting for the call.
Yeah.
Slowly heating up from the radiation.
Yeah.
Do you think Data survives that if, like, let's just say they're in the booby trap and everyone dies? Like, Data lives, right?
I don't know. I don't know what his radiation imperviousness is. I guess he, if it's that one type that they had on the planet with the lady with the cute bangs.
Yeah.
On Goshevin planet.
Yeah, planet Goshevin. Planet Goshevin.
What does that mean?
I don't know. That part's unclear, I guess. But I like to think about the possibilities of that, headcanon mm-hmm. style.
Yeah.
What do we have coming up next time?
The next episode is season 3, episode 7, The Enemy. After Geordi is stranded on a storm-ravaged planet, the crew attempts to rescue him and are hindered by an aggressive Romulan warship. Do you remember this episode, Adam?
Would that be the enemy that they're talking about in the title?
Yeah, I would assume so.
Maybe it's about Geordi's broken heart as the enemy.
Do you remember this one?
Geordi's only thing on that storm-ravaged planet is like fashioning some sort of sex doll. I don't remember this episode at all. At all.
I think it's a dope episode, if memory serves.
I'm down. Guess we have to see it anyway.
Yeah. A lot of people, after we talked about a top 10, wanted to know what our top 10 was. I feel like that's something we should start to think about, is like how we build a top 10 into this show.
Yeah, I think now's a good time to start. I think we have a good sample size here.
Now that we've gotten most of the real flagrant turkeys out of the way.
Yeah.
And there's starting to be some good episodes.
I think it's the right time for a little Coco Moco and a top 10 list.
Yeah.
What was that drink called?
Coco No No.
Coco No No. Oh, no. Oh, no, no. This show is made possible by the generous contributions from our listeners. If you're interested in supporting the show, you should go to MaximumFun.org/donate.
Yeah. We've just been so delighted to be on the Maximum Fun Network, and there's so many great shows on there that you should give listens to. You've got Adam Ruins Everything, The Adventure Zone, Jordan Jesse Go, Bullseye, Minority Corner just started. That's a real terrific show.
There's a wrestling podcast coming out that I'm really pumped about.
Are you really?
Yeah, totally.
I don't know anything about wrestling, but that sounds pretty fun.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe I'll start to learn.
I'm all in. We have various Facebook pages. We're on Twitter all the time, compulsively. You can find me there as at Cut for Time. Ben's there as at Benjamin R. AHR.
Use the hashtag GreatestGen on Twitter. We will find your tweet and probably we will fave it.
Yeah.
Unless it's like a joke that we're not sure if it's an insult or a compliment.
We're real fave whores.
Yeah, and then maybe we won't fave that one.
Yeah.
We're on Reddit. There's a Maximum Fun Reddit. There's a Greatest Gen Reddit. Both active, fun places to talk about the show. And we should thank Dark Materia for our music. You can email us at drunkshimoda@gmail.com.
You can. You should.
With that, we will be back at you next time with another great episode of Star Trek The Next Generation and another Blind Geordi in a Nightmare Planet episode of this show.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.